This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
شعلاني هالغيرين فلسطين بلادي الحلوة يا ما شاء الله
يا طير
تحميك عيوني وتصونك عين الله لا عكس وحيفة سلم ع بحرنا ما تنسى مصري هالقلعة العربية قبل لي بيسان برجعة ثانية
and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Our guest today will be Dr. Mazen Qumsiya, co-founder of several organizations, including Al-Auda, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition, Triangle Middle East Dialogue, and Carolina Middle East Association, member of the steering committee of the U.S. campaign to end the occupation, the board of the Association for One Democratic State in Israel-Palestine and the Executive Committee of the Palestinian American Congress and author of several books and articles. We will talk with him about the 40th anniversary of the Israeli military occupation of the West Bank, Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem, and the Golan Heights, as well as the 59th anniversary of the Palestinian catastrophe, or al-Nakba. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's start with Arab Voices Community Calendar.
Dr. Shafiq Ghabra, the host and commentator for the weekly Diwaniya, a new socio-political TV program aimed at opening a dialogue with young people in the Middle East and bridging the gap between generations, will be coming to Houston. The title of the talk is Eyes on the Future, How Youth in the Middle East View Their World. Some of the topics covered during that talk will be hopes of young people, the fears and challenges that face them, who inspires them and who do they look to for guidance, and how will this youth bulge affect regional transformation. The event is sponsored by the Houston World Affairs Council. It'll be held June 25th at 6 p.m. at the Junior League. That's at 1811 Briar Oaks Lane. For more information, go to their website, www.hwac.net.
The American Ramallah Federation will hold its annual Ramallah Convention right here in Houston, and this year's theme is the dawning of the new generation. The convention is intended for members to come together to celebrate family, culture, success, empowerment, and how to look for greater future accomplishments through the involvement in the American political process. The 49th annual Ramallah Convention will be held on June 27th through July 1st at the Hilton Americas Hotel, located on 1600 Lamar in downtown Houston. For more information, visit www.ramallahclubhouston.com.
Sunday, June 10th, marks four decades of Israel's illegal military occupation of Palestine against a backdrop of nearly 60 years of ethnic transfer and displacement.
To feel this freedom, it's very, very important.
This occupation is wrong, unjust, and will end.
We all have the dream that one day there will be a place that we can call home.
Tune in to a Pacifica National Special, Cages and Dreams. 40 years of occupation, 60 years of dispossession in Palestine. Hear Palestinian voices from the older generation and today's youth movements, from refugee camps and the Palestinian diaspora. That's Cages and Dreams from Pacifica Radio.
This national special is co-hosted by Saeed Fatouh of KPFT's Arab Voices. It airs Sunday, June 10th at 6 p.m. Again, that's Sunday, June 10th at 6 p.m. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
And for more detailed information about the events we just mentioned, or for a list of many other events scheduled in Houston, please visit our website at www.arabvoices.net. You will also find links to alternative news and resources about the Arab world, its culture and civilization, as well as resources for Arab Americans and about Arab Americans. That's www.arabvoices.net. We are skipping the news segment this evening to allow more time for our special program, talking with our special guest, Dr. Mazen Qumsiya, about the 40th anniversary of the Israeli military occupation of Palestine and the 59th anniversary of the Palestinian catastrophe, or al-Nakba. For 40 years now, Israel has systematically worked on stealing Palestinian land by force, evicting tens of thousands of Palestinians from their homes, annexing tens of thousands of acres of Palestinian land, demolishing thousands of Palestinian houses, uprooting hundreds of thousands of trees from the Palestinian land, and in many cases, stealing the trees and planting them again inside Israel. For the past 40 years, Israel has built hundreds of illegal colonies on Palestinian land inside the occupied Palestinian territories and placing some 450,000 Jewish colonizers in them, building Jews-only roads for the colonies to use and confiscating by force more Palestinian land to secure the Jews-only roads that lead to the colonies. For the past 40 years, Israel has killed thousands of Palestinians, men, women, and elderly, and has targeted and killed hundreds of Palestinian children. In the year 2000, Israel murdered Mohammed al-Durra, a 12-year-old Palestinian boy who was in the hands of his father hiding from the Israeli bullets. In the year 2001, Israel murdered Iman Hijjo, a 4-month young Palestinian infant. In 2004, Israel murdered Iman al-Homs, a 13-year-old Palestinian girl. She was shot 20 times. She was wearing her school uniform and was on her way to school. In the year 2006, Israel murdered 11 members of one Palestinian family that was having a picnic at Gaza Beach, leaving Huda Ghalia, 11-year-old Palestinian girl, crying over her dad's body. And just last week, Israel murdered 2 13-year-old Palestinian boys in Gaza, in the so-called liberated Gaza. And the list goes on and on and on. For the past 40 years, Israel has used its military power, financed and supplied by the United States, to launch airstrikes from the sea, land and air against the Palestinians, in violation of the U.S. Arms Export Control Act, causing massive death and destruction. For the past 40 years, Israel has been erecting military checkpoints and roadblocks, holding Palestinian civilians for countless hours at the checkpoints, preventing medical aid to the Palestinians, holding pregnant Palestinian women at the checkpoints, and preventing them from reaching hospitals, which resulted in many cases in the death of the newborns at the checkpoints. For the past 40 years, Israel has not failed once to violate the Geneva Conventions, international laws, norms, and treaties by imposing military curfews, imposing closures and economic strangulations, kidnapping thousands of Palestinians, confiscating land, refusing to allow the nearly 6.5 million Palestinian refugees from returning to their homes, and erecting the apartheid wall, a clear intention for land theft, because it cuts deep into the West Bank, expanding Israel's theft of Palestinian land and resources. The 40-year-old brutal Israeli military occupation of Palestine is now considered the longest enduring military occupation in the world.
لأجل من تسرّى سقط العدل على المداخل حين هوت مدينة القدس تراجع الحب وفي قلوب الدنيا استوطنت الحرب حين هوت مدينة القدس تراجع الحب وفي قلوب الدنيا استوطنت الحرب الطفل في المغارة
Welcome back to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Joining us now live over the phone is Dr. Mazen Qumsiyah. Dr. Qumsiyah is a Palestinian-American activist, co-founder of several organizations, including Al-Auda, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition, Triangle Middle East Dialogue, and Carolina Middle East Association. He currently serves on the steering committee of the U.S. Campaign to End the Occupation, the board of the Association for One Democratic State in Israel-Palestine, and the executive committee of the Palestinian American Congress, and also a member of a number of human rights groups such as Amnesty, Peace Action, Human Rights Watch, and the ACLU. Dr. Qumsiyah authored several books, including Sharing the Land of Canaan, Human Rights and the Israeli-Palestinian Struggle. He is a self-syndicated columnist and a frequent publisher of letters and articles to numerous newspapers and magazines, both in print and online worldwide, and frequently appears on TV and radio programs nationally and internationally. He also maintains an activism book published electronically on the web at qumsiyah.org. That's Qumsiyah.org. Dr. Mazen Qumsiyah also served on the faculty of both Duke and Yale universities. Dr. Qumsiyah, welcome back to Arab Voices.
Thank you for having me, Saeed and Mark.
Thank you. We are pleased to have you with us. Dr. Qumsiyah, yesterday, June 5th, 2007, marked the 40th anniversary of the Israeli brutal military occupation of Palestine. And I'm talking about the 22% of historic Palestine, the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. Last month, the Palestinians were commemorating the 59th anniversary of Al-Nakba, or the catastrophe, when Israel declared its independence after wiping out hundreds of villages, kicking out more than 850,000 Palestinians of their homes in 1948. But you know, and I know, that this problem started even before 1948. Could you take us to the pre-1948 era, please, regarding Palestine and Israel?
Yes, actually it started almost 100 years before 1948 when the British hired the services of a guy by the name of George Gawler, who was responsible for British colonization in Australia. And in 1845, he wrote a book basically summarizing what they asked him to do, which is to look into the feasibility of establishing a Jewish state in Palestine. And that was the origin of modern Zionism, although the word Zionism came into play a little later in the 1870s and 1880s. And the first Zionist colony in Palestine was in 1880. And then some of your listeners might know that Theodor Herzl wrote a book titled The State of the Jews, or the Judenstaat, published it in 1897, and then immediately afterwards the first Zionist Congress was formalized and the Zionist movement picked up steam. And at that Congress, actually, it was predicted that it would might take 50 years from then, and it took exactly 50 years to establish a Jewish state on land. I mean, there has been a lot of historical developments in between, which we will not have time to go into, but the bottom line is At the time, the Zionist movement thought or planned to develop the land for to become a Jewish state, and the obstacle to this was obviously the native people, in the same fashion that development of the white European colonies all over the world, including in North America and South America, had the obstacle of having the native people being there. And the native people had to be dealt with one way or the other. In the case of North America and South America, there was genocides and there were diseases that wiped them out, or at least most of them. In the case of Palestine, there was, as you pointed out, ethnic cleansing that happened continuously, essentially, but peaked at certain periods. And I don't want to, you know, take it into thinking that the ethnic cleansing only occurred in 1947 and 48 when Israel was established. It happened before that, and it happened certainly after that. In the past 60 years, there has been continuous process of home demolitions and destruction of villages and towns. In total, there are 530 Palestinian villages and towns that have been wiped off the face of the map, depopulated, and those are the bulk of the Palestinian refugees and displaced people. This is in brief what had transpired over the past 150 years or so. On the other side, of course, the Palestinians didn't accept this fate, you know, and just go away. They continued to resist, and they continued to exist on their land, and that has been a beacon of hope for all of us Palestinians. We have never given up our patrimony, our right, our land, and today, even with all the ethnic cleansing that had happened, there are still over 5 million Palestinians between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea.
And I wanted to, I know we don't want to spend the entire time on the pre-1948, but I think it is important because we frequently on this show and via email and so on, people question, well, there was never Palestine before 1948 to begin with, and that land was for the Jews anyway. And just to clarify, and I know you know this information, you mentioned, first of all, going back to 1897, referring to the first Zionist Congress. I think that was held in Switzerland, in Basel, and then the 1917 Balfour Declaration, which is basically the Balfour is the Lord Arthur Balfour, the British Secretary of State at that time, who pledged a home state, a Jewish national home in Palestine for the Jews. And Palestine was under the British mandate during that time until 1947 or so, when the United Nations General Assembly voted to partition Palestine into two states, one Arab and one Jewish. And one thing important I want to mention here that I know for a fact, that Palestine, first of all, was mainly Palestinian Arabs before 1948. The overwhelming majority were Arabs. As a matter of fact, the most of the population up to 1947, there were 56, or the partition that took place gave the Jews 56% of the best land in Palestine. And at that time, they were only making up 32% of the population and only owned 6% of the land. And that's after they were growing more and more and more every day between the 1800s and the 1947. And that's why the Palestinians and the Arabs rejected the United Nations partition plan, because it was not fair whatsoever, bringing immigrants, colonizers, and giving them 56% of the land. Isn't that an accurate statement?
Yes, I think you summarized it very well. I mean, imagine if somebody came today and said, we want to partition Texas and give two-thirds of it to the Baptists in Texas. And any Baptist in the world can come and live in Texas, if in this part of Texas. And then the history then moves on and the rest of Texas is taken over by whatever religion. I mean, don't have to be Baptist or any kind of minority religion that becomes then the majority to control, to have sovereignty. And this is unprecedented in world history, where a religion takes over as a form of government. And for your listeners, the word in Arabic for Palestine is Philistine, and most people will recognize this pronunciation from their Bibles for the Philistines that existed in there for thousands of years. And this is the land. The geography of the land is called Palestine, Philistine, and this land has obviously acquired many different people over the years, but the native people continue to exist, and those native people are us, the Palestinians, who acquired different religions as time went by. So Judaism came along, and then of course Christianity. Many of us converted to Christianity, and many later converted to Islam. So my family, for example, is a Palestinian Christian family, but we traced our ancestors to the Canaanites, who lived there 4,000 years ago or more. So it is important for people to realize that while religions come and go, the native people continue to exist.
And if I may share this also with the listeners, and I think that hits it on the point here, that's important, that's coming actually from an Israeli. Because Israel has always put the myth out there and the propaganda claiming that Palestine was a land without people for people without a land, repeatedly repeating that statement all over the world for years. A myth that they're still repeating to date. And I have a quote for the former Israeli defense minister, Moshe Dayan, who said in a speech at the Technion in 1969, which was actually published in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz on April 4, 1969, Moshe Dayan said, quote, "Jewish villages were built in the place of Arab villages. You don't even know the names of these Arab villages, and I don't blame you because geography books no longer exist. Not only do the books not exist, the Arab villages are not there either," unquote. That was from the mouth of the Israeli former defense minister.
Right, and when you say people without a land without a people for a people without a land, also both sides of the statement are incorrect, because Jews obviously have lands. It's like any other religion, like, you know, European Jews, European Christians, European Baha'is, or anybody who lives in other countries who acquires different religions obviously has land, the land that they live in. They don't, we never, in at least in the 20th and 21st century, we don't ask to segregate people by religion. We don't have a country for the Baha'is. We don't have a country for the Zoroastrians, or a country for whatever. I mean, we do not consider it right to segregate people based on their religions.
I wanted to jump in with a comment here. Dr. Khumsia, you brought up an example which I think might help people understand what happened in Palestine, and the example you gave of the Baptists taking two-thirds of Texas. But I think one very critical difference is that the majority of the Jewish population of Israel specifically, but Jews in general, and unfortunately a pretty large percentage of Christians, especially the Baptists, ironically enough, since you brought them up in the example, believe that the land where Israel now sits was promised to the Jews, and that is not the case with Texas being promised to the Baptists, and that's one of the big obstacles that I don't see the Arabs having been able to deal with in any way. What do you make of the historical significance of the text of the Old Testament and the promising of the land, and then as well, how do you deal with the Christian Zionist support for Jewish Zionists?
Well, it's actually the settlement of Europeans in North America was accompanied by biblical manifestations and use of language of the Bible and so forth. So many people who colonize other people's lands have used the language of the Bible. And history books here are replete with ideas like manifest destiny, whereby the white European settlers were thought to have a right to this land because God gave them the right to conquer this land, and being the chosen people and all of that, same kind of language. Yes, there are some differences, but in reality colonizers have used also very similar language in conquering these lands. And the question is you know, obviously the Native Americans, as I said earlier, most of them are gone now, and those who remain live in reservations, which is precisely what is being planned for the Palestinians, a process that continues to today. using our taxes, using our funding from the U.S. And so that's why it's important. If people recognize that what was done to the Native Americans was wrong, then certainly they would recognize that also Native Palestinians have the same, have the right. And this is something happening today, not 200 years or 300 years ago.
I wonder, though, whether in fact most people in this country at least do recognize the extent to which the Native Americans were dispossessed and brutalized and wiped off the map as they were. I don't know how conscious of that history most U.S. citizens are. I'm not sure if your experience is different from mine.
The consciousness had come about in the past really 40, 50 years, and even less than that. Even if you look at movies in the 1950s, ironically, I watch those sometimes because the same kind of language that was used about Palestinians today was used about Native Americans, even in those movies. You know, the idea of the savages, the barbarians, who hate us for no obvious reasons, who want to kill us for no obvious reasons. These are from the movies in the 50s and even in the 60s from Hollywood about Native Americans. And so we see the similarities. I don't want to dismiss the idea that there are a lot of similarities that are happening, and that history repeats itself when people don't learn from history.
I want to remind our listeners of the phone number to call and ask questions live of our guest, who is Dr. Mazen Qumsiyah, a Palestinian-American activist, co-founder of Alauda, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition, and who also served on the faculty of both Duke and Yale universities. That number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And you are listening to Arab Voices on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Dr. Qumsiyah, if you could tell us what happened between 1948 or after the Israeli Declaration of Independence in 1948 and 1967, and then we'll concentrate on the situation now that has been taking place since 1967 to today.
Yes, just a couple of observations. In 1948, one must realize that the UN partition recommendation, it was a recommendation, was never implemented because it had specific mechanisms of implementation, and those were never invoked, and it was never accomplished on the ground. Israel was declared unilaterally on May 14, 1948. And this happened after, as I think you also alluded to, Israeli forces. Before they were called Israeli forces, they were called Haganah and other underground forces of Israeli soldiers, engaged in what is today described as ethnic cleansing. Over half the Palestinian villages and towns were depopulated before May 14, 1948, when the State of Israel was declared. And when the State of Israel was declared, the ethnic cleansing continued. And then, of course, there was Israel as a result of the war, and Israel was much more superior in power and arms, armed by the British and others, Czechoslovakia and others, had much more power than the people who fought against the establishment of the State of Israel on Palestinian land. And as a result of the winning the war, basically Israel ended up with 78% of Palestine. And then 19 years later, in 1967, Israel took the remaining 22% of Palestine. That is the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, of course, is part of the West Bank. These areas remain under Israeli occupation till today, 40 years later, contrary to international law and all UN resolutions about the matter. UN resolutions are very clear about the illegality of this occupation and about the need of Israel to withdraw from these areas that they occupy, and for them to then engage in negotiations about the reality of what is essential for peace, which is the right of refugees to return to their homes and lands. So that's, again, you know, very briefly what had happened over the years, all funded and supported by our government here in the United States and by our taxes. And that creates a huge problem for America. And this is all happening thanks to the strong Israeli lobby in Washington that continues to push for policies that are contrary to U.S. interests, but it serves elite interests of a few Zionists. Not even the Israeli public interest, but the elite interests in Israel and the U.S.
Could you tell us your feedback on all these negotiations that have taken place over the past few years? Well, it's obvious without saying that they have all failed, whether it's the Camp David talks, whether it's the Oslo Accord, whether it's the Taba talks and all that stuff. And constantly we hear also that the Israelis and the United States and the so-called Middle Eastern experts on the corporate media TVs here saying that the Palestinians have always missed the peace opportunities. The Palestinians are refusing this and that.
Well, I mean, there has been many proposals for peace, and we could compile them all into many, many books. Many pages have been written, many resolutions have been made, the Zini plan, the Rogers plan, the Schultz plan, and so forth and so on. Amnesty International, I think, summed it up very well with regards to the Western plans, the plans that came from America and Europe primarily. And Amnesty International said the reason those plans failed is because they ignore human rights, including the Oslo Accords, by the way. Amnesty said the reason the Oslo Accords failed is because they ignore human rights. And it is ironic that the latest plan that's out there, which is the so-called roadmap to peace, is 2,218 words. And you see four words missing from that plan. These are human rights and international law. You won't find them anywhere in this roadmap to peace that George Bush is peddling, that basically was written for him by AIPAC at the State Department, the Israeli lobby basically in Washington. So, I mean, to me and to many Palestinians like me, the ideas of these maps and organizations and others saying that we can achieve peace by this and this is really to ignore the two basic elements which would bring real genuine peace, and that is human rights and international law. If one wants peace, you don't need any of these plans. All you need is to implement existing human rights conventions. Take the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's a one-page document, and implement it. That alone would be sufficient. But if you want something more, there are the international resolutions at the United Nations. There are over 65 UN Security Council resolutions that Israel is violating. There are hundreds of General Assembly resolutions that Israel is violating.
And I want to share with our listeners also, and if you could give us some more information about that, because this is very important, I think. It just shows how premeditated the Israeli crimes are. It wasn't only against the Palestinians in 1967. It wasn't only against the Egyptians and against the Syrians and so on. They also attacked the USS Liberty, a U.S. Navy ship, that was in international waters. This is during the Six-Day War, what's called the Six-Day War in 1967. And they killed some 34 U.S. servicemen and they injured over 172. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, people can get more information by going to the website of the survivors of this incredible tragedy. And that website of the survivors is USSLiberty.org. And USS Liberty survivors, all of them, not a single one of them, contradicted the notion that this was a deliberate attack on a ship carrying the American flag, widely obvious from miles further that it's an American ship. And yet it was strafed by Israeli airplanes not once, but twice. Not only that, but the interesting feature of this is that when some U.S. other forces in the Mediterranean, the ship was armed only with light arms and did not have force protections at the time. But the forces, American forces in the Mediterranean, who was ready to go to protect the ship, airplanes were dispatched and they were recalled on orders of the White House. And this is something that is amazing, that a U.S. ship is attacked in international water deliberately. The U.S. refuses to investigate this because Congress is under the thumb of the Israeli lobby at the time and still is today. where it refuses to allow a full investigation of what really happened, despite what the survivors of the USS Liberty said themselves. And again, people should investigate it themselves to find out the facts for themselves, and listen to what the survivors said, and also listen to what some high-ranking U.S. officials have said. Even the CIA director at the time said that this was a deliberate attack on the USS Liberty, and he was silenced too. So I think people need to investigate this, because it's amazing to me that the only time a U.S. Intelligence ship is, or any kind of U.S. ship is attacked in international water and goes without investigation and without any punishment that was carried is this attack, which was precisely, again, 40 years ago.
And that website that you gave us was usslibertynet.org, and we will have a link to that on our website, arabvoices.net. How do you see the situation now inside the occupied Palestinian territories in the Gaza Strip, in the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, and even in other areas? How are the Palestinians coping with the ongoing daily atrocities and killings? I mean, today, two Palestinians were killed in Gaza by Israel. There has not been a single day that passes by without a house being demolished, without some Palestinians being killed, without Palestinians being kidnapped by the Israelis, or without a land being confiscated. How, and not to mention the economic blockade that is completely affecting the lives of all the Palestinians there.
I go to Palestine every year, and I'm going there again next month. And every year I go, it gets worse and worse. The situation gets worse and worse. And it is hard to describe. I mean, you try to describe it, I try to describe it. But it's really, I mean, people have to go see it for themselves. Or if they don't want to go, at least get some video, you know. And you can go on YouTube now and Google video and others and see some video. Like, go to YouTube and watch Occupation 101. And there's a series of that. And it shows you the reality on the ground. It's almost unbelievable to somebody who has not seen it. And the words in the English language are very limited to describe the level of atrocities. Roni Kasrel, who is the Jewish, actually South African minister, who was, now a minister in South Africa, wrote about the situation in Palestine as being much worse than apartheid in South Africa was. Now, you can say, how could it be worse than apartheid in South Africa? It is worse, because during apartheid South Africa, people were not imprisoned in ghettos without food and shelter. In fact, the South African economy depended on employing black labor at very cheap wages, or obviously exploited labor. But at least there were some jobs and there were some food for them. And they never surrounded them with 20-foot concrete walls and fences and ditches that makes life impossible, basically, to live. And already one-third of the Palestinian children are undernourished, and another third is malnourished. And so it really is becoming very, very difficult situation. And it's very, very hard to describe it, especially in such a format in a radio program, without showing some pictures or videos that would show what's happening. That's why I encourage your listeners to go to YouTube or others and look for themselves at what's happening. Or better yet, travel with us to Palestine. Come with us to Palestine. I'd be happy to take people to Palestine. We took delegations from Connecticut here every year. We took 33 people last year, and we hope to take a lot more this year. So it is very important for people to do that, to travel and find out for themselves.
And programming note for our listeners, we are doing another special next week on this 40th year of the occupation and 60 years of dispossession of the Palestinians. And next week we're going to have Dr. Mona El-Farra live on this show. She is the vice president of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society and an activist for the children in Gaza. She's going to be joining us live to describe and talk about the daily life and what's going on and the human tragedy that is affecting the children of Palestine and others. That's next week. Dr. Qumsiya said people can travel with you. You can arrange for that. If they want more info, how can they contact you? Can they contact you through your website?
Yes, they can also contact me through your website. They email you, I'm sure you will...
Absolutely.
My way.
And we'll have a link to your website, which is qumsiya.com, on our website, arabvoices.net. I want to remind the listeners again of the phone number, 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. If you have any questions for our guest, please give us a call now. And our guest this evening is Dr. Mazen Qumsiya, a Palestinian-American activist who served on the faculty of both Duke and Yale universities.
Actually, the mention of universities brings up one question. Have you heard of an organization called Campus Watch?
Yes, I am on their on their list.
Well, I found you there. I was wondering how aware of their activities you were and how this ties into the propaganda about the Middle East and how it's connected so much, not only to the media, but to the education system, to publishing, to, you know, journalism in general. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. So in the U.S., there are people who support Zionism as an ideology, the ideology of segregation of us here, them there. The Jews can't live with other cultures. They have to have separation of religions, that Palestinians are not allowed to return to their homes and lands because they are Christians or Muslims. And those people who believe in this ideology have very powerful positions in this country, and they claim to represent Jews in this country, even though many, many Jews in this country don't agree with them. And I have on my own website over 45, 50 Jewish organizations in the U.S. Who are opposed to these ideologies. But anyway, these people who support this and consider themselves representative of quote-unquote mainstream Judaism will push for silencing any critics of Israel and equating any criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism, or more accurately, anti-Jewish feelings, because, after all, Arabs are Semites. And so anyway, they try to suppress truth by using this trump card of anti-Semitism, or in the case if the criticism is coming from Jews, they will say self-hating Jews. They'll label them as self-hating Jews. This lobby, if we may use that term, which Jimmy Carter alluded to in his book and also in many interviews, because, as you know, when he published his book, Peace Not Apartheid, Palestine Peace Not Apartheid, this same lobby attacked him. And he came out and he said, there's a problem in this country. We cannot discuss these issues in the mainstream media because there are people who don't want us discussing these issues in a rational and objective way. And this is not just in the media, of course. In Congress, you can't discuss it in a rational and objective way. In any public discourse, in universities, for example, there is pressure to conform. And these groups that do this pressure, the lobby groups, are in the thousands. Literally, there are thousands of them. Campus Watch, that you mentioned, is just one such group. There are many others. Anti-Defamation League, a group called CAMERA, Committee on quote-unquote accuracy in Middle East reporting, and hundreds of other groups all around the country that try to suppress any kind of discussion of the truth or showing of the facts on the ground for what happens in Palestine. Without the internet, without things like YouTube, without things like email and internet, I think we would be in great trouble. We would not have the capability to reach out to, and of course, you know, we now have other alternatives like radio shows and talk shows like yours and others, who are slowly beginning to take the message out and allow a more rational discussion.
And let's allow our listeners the opportunity to hop on this discussion. We have a few callers already on hold. Again, the phone number is 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Let's go ahead and take our first caller for the evening.
That would be Jerry. You're on the air. Hello, Jerry.
Jerry, can you hear us? Jerry? Okay, let's go ahead and take the second caller on hold. And
let's try Phil.
Hi.
Hey, Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. One thing I enjoy very much in this series is the music, music that comes.
Could you speak up, please?
Could you speak louder, Phil? Phil, we can't hear you.
One thing I enjoy very much in this program is the music. The music, I enjoy it very much because I used to hear such music when I was much younger in my country, Nigeria. Now, with regard to this action by Israel over the past 40 years, you know, it borders on genocide, which continues with destruction of house and property and people. And now I heard news recently that academic staff union of several thousands in the UK were planning some boycott, and also COSATU, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, are planning some boycott of Israeli goods and services, and academic union are trying to boycott the academics in Israel. Have you heard anything about this, and how far are they going with this?
Thank you for your call. This is a very good question and very timely. Yes, there is a movement for BDS, boycotts, divestments and sanctions from Israel, along the same lines of what happened against apartheid South Africa in the 70s and the 80s. And just like with the boycott against apartheid South Africa, it started slow, but now the, as they say, the snowball is rolling and it's picking up steam. And we were very gratified that the largest teachers union in England, that of the teachers in higher education, colleges and universities in England, representing over 120,000 employees, essentially the leadership voted 2-1 to go ahead and boycott Israeli academics. This is very significant, and the same for the largest trade union in South Africa, actually the coalition of trade unions, machinists and others in South Africa, who voted for a boycott of Israel along the same lines that happened with apartheid South Africa. Academic boycotts and cultural boycotts and economic boycotts are picking up steam. I do want to make a point about why this is so significant. It is significant not primarily because of its direct impact on the country. When South Africa was boycotted, the economy was not suffering that badly because of the boycotts. It was more a psychological and a moral statement, and it was important for the white South African rulers and elites in South Africa to see that the world does not accept their form of apartheid and does not accept apartheid, period. And this was very important in getting them to the stage where they decided to abandon apartheid. And the same thing with Israel. I think it's very, very critical from a moral standpoint to arrive at peace. It's a nonviolent method of resistance, obviously. And it involves bringing consciousness to people around the world, but also to Israelis themselves. Many Israelis view themselves not as part of Western Asia, but view themselves as part of Europe, colonial Europe, basically. And as such, they are respected in Europe, admired in Europe, etc. That's how they look at it. Now, when Europe started to change, that will start to change the mentality of many Israelis. And I think that's why it's so, so critical, especially the cultural and academic boycotts, not even the economic boycotts, especially in America here, of course, we don't have many Israeli products unless, you know, there's an Israeli products that are building the fence between Texas and Mexico now. Israeli company is building that. But as far as, you know, it's security-related things that Israel exports, but they don't export very much other things to the rest of the world.
Well, they have a lot of fence-building experience, unfortunately, and I hate to interrupt you, but we have a lot of other callers, and I'd like to take a couple more if we could. So let's go next to Rick. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you two questions on the Liberty. And the first was that I had what the accounts I'd read of the Liberty was Johnson pulled back the fighters because he was afraid that the Liberty was being attacked by the Soviets and wanted to prevent World War III, and wanted to know your comment on that. And the second was, what was Israel's aim in sinking the Liberty? Were the Israelis trying to achieve a political goal by sinking the Liberty?
All right,
hang up. Questions.
Okay, Rick, thank you.
To the first question, why did
and Dr. Humsey, we only have about 2 minutes, so if you can make your answer brief.
So why did he pull back the forces? Because he thought the Soviets were attacking them. Well, if the Soviet planes were attacking an American ship, I'm sure it would be defended, regardless of any risks or whatever. They would defend themselves because they are the ones being attacked. So I just don't buy that. With regards to the second, why Israel attacked them, there is some speculations from the survivors that was because they could have been listening on some of the atrocities that Israel was committing, including killing hundreds of Egyptian POWs in the Sinai as they were capturing them. They were massacring them.
And with the last few, with a couple of minutes left, if you can give us a last thought, Dr. Qumsiya, on this 40th anniversary of the occupation and the 60th anniversary of the disposition, and also remind the listeners of your website again for more information.
Yes, I just want to remind people listening to this that this is not an issue for Palestinians and Israelis alone. In fact, there's more responsibility on us as Americans, because this issue would have been solved long ago if the U.S. government was not under the thumb of the Israeli lobby in Washington. And if we can break the hold of the lobby on our capital, on Washington, D.C., then we would have a much better economy in this country. We would not have spent $1 trillion on Israel. So it is directly related to our security here, to our people, to the U.S. Population, which is suffering as a result of this foreign policy that's not in the interest of the U.S. public. And so people need to be involved, because that's how we can affect change. That's how we ended the war on Vietnam and and other things, civil rights, everything that we got that's positive in this country happened when people got involved, and we encourage people to get involved. My website is qumsiya.org. QUMSIYEH.org.
And that was the voice of Dr. Mazen Qumsiya, a Palestinian American activist. Thank you so much, Dr. Qumsiya, for your time.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. And don't forget to stay tuned for Technology Bites coming up next. And that wraps it up for the show tonight.
And apologies to Mark and Karen and Phil and other people that we didn't get get on the air with us today.
Yes, thanks for listening to Arab Voices. And many thanks to my co-host Mark. This is Saeed, producer and host of the show. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
Sunday, June 10th, marks 4 decades of Israel's illegal military occupation of Palestine against a backdrop of nearly 60 years of ethnic transfer and displacement.
To feel this freedom, it's very, very important.
This occupation is wrong, unjust, and will end.
We all have the dream that one day there will be a place that we can call home.
Tune in to a Pacifica National Special, Cages and Dreams. 40 years of occupation, 60 years of dispossession in Palestine. Hear Palestinian voices from the older generation and today's youth movements, from refugee camps and the Palestinian diaspora. That's Cages and Dreams from Pacifica Radio.
This national special is co-hosted by Saeed Fatou of Arab Voices. It airs Sunday, June 10th at 6 p.m. Again, that's Sunday, June 10th at 6. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Want to do a little self-empowerment as well as a different sort of outreach? If you're interested in becoming deputized by the City of Houston to write parking tickets to disabled parking violators, the next class is scheduled for June 14th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The class will be held at 611 Walker, also known as the City of Houston Public Works Building, Garden Level Auditorium, zip code 77002. The 611 Walker Building is across the street from Shell Plaza. Please contact Patricia Patrick at 713-853-8158 if you would like to participate and for more information. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
The FCC has announced it will allow Americans to apply for full power, non-commercial FM radio licenses between October 12th and 19th, 2007. This is a rare opportunity, and it is likely to be the last. Many Americans are increasingly frustrated with mainstream media.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.